Good morning. Thank you for having me to your beautiful congregation, especially on a day as holy as Super Bowl Sunday. Perhaps more than anything else, we Unitarian Universalists take pride in our history of working for social justice. While we've made our share of stumbles, UUs have been and continue to be on the front lines of some of the most important social justice issues in our nation's history. From the struggle against slavery and for marriage equality, to current campaigns for Black Lives Matter and the rights of immigrants, our faith has a long legacy of pushing back against oppression. Oftentimes, we're combating oppressions that are justified by a group with power, pointing out arbitrary differences between themselves and the oppressed in order to justify an unfair status quo. I think we're all in agreement about various differences that should not factor into matters of justice. For example, one's skin color shouldn't determine whether one is treated with respect and kindness. Another thing that's not relevant in this context is what country one was born in. Other factors that shouldn't matter include a person's gender or whom one loves. All of these differences should be irrelevant when it comes to determining whether an individual deserves rights and to be treated with decency. Today, I'd like to posit another thing that shouldn't matter either, species. A quick bit of background. I grew up attending the First Unitarian Society of Newton. I'm so glad my parents brought me up in a UU community. One of the best parts of families raising a child in a UU congregation is that you surround them with other adults who care and who take the child and their ideas seriously. For me, one of those wonderful adults was our Director of Religious Education, now your minister, Anne Bancroft. These people taught me to learn from the work of past and current social justice trailblazers, but to not be satisfied with that. They taught me that in a world with so much suffering, we all have a moral duty to continue to question. When I was in middle school, a teacher showed me a short documentary of the horrible ways animals are treated in the factory farms that provide virtually all the meat, dairy, and eggs sold in grocery stores and restaurants today. The video showed mother pigs locked for months in barren metal cages so small they can't turn around. It showed today's typical meat chicken bred to grow so large, so fast, her legs can't keep up, leaving her crippled under her own body weight. It showed turkeys who aren't protected by a single federal animal welfare law being violently killed. This hit me hard. My extremely patient parents had allowed me to accumulate a house full of beloved pets, but I still ate pork chops and chicken breasts. I soon started asking myself, how could I treat some animals with such care and compassion while being complicit in a system that abuses and commodifies other animals? As I grappled with these issues and eventually became a vegetarian, the adults around me, including those who I looked up to so much in my Unitarian church, were continually supportive, and for that I am forever grateful. Humans have long tried to come up with excuses for why it's acceptable to treat animals as inferior beings, why we can use their bodies for our pizza toppings, their skin for our handbags, and their immune systems as test tubes for our chemicals. At different points, humans have said it's because animals don't have language, don't use tools, or that they aren't intelligent. Over time, each of those claims has been thoroughly dismantled by scientists. For example, some species of fish can use tools. Pigs are so intelligent, they can be taught to play video games. cows have complex communication systems. The magazine Scientific American had a cover story a couple years ago entitled "The Startling Intelligence of the Common Chicken." The magazine wrote, "Mounting evidence indicates that the common chicken is much smarter than it has been given credit for." A sweet note about chickens. Mother hens start clucking, communicating, to her chicks before the chicks even come out of their shells. But even before those claims had been refuted, we should have been asking ourselves, so what? So what if an animal can use tools or speak? Imagine what you'd think if a politician claimed that people who are less intelligent or lack verbal communication skills deserve fewer rights. So what distinction does matter? What shared thing do we all share that makes us worthy of moral consideration? I don't think it's that we're Homo sapiens. I think it's that we're sentient. The ability to feel, whether it's pleasure or pain, love or loneliness, contentment or despair. Is that the distinction that truly matters? If it is, then surely we need to extend our compassion to other sentient beings. Before I go further, I want to make clear this sermon isn't about lowering humans. While we have enormous flaws, we are an amazing species. And there are, of course, huge differences between our species and others, and major differences between various social justice struggles. This isn't about bringing down humans to the level of animals. It's about questioning why we have animals so low in the first place. It's about crystallizing a strong moral foundation for all of our social justice work, sentience. The philosopher Jeremy Bentham was one of the 19th century leading voices in the fight for a more just world. He worked for many issues, including equal rights for women and the decriminalization of homosexuality. He also pushed for the rights of animals. He wrote, quote, "The question is not can they reason, nor can they talk, but can they suffer?" Let me now turn from an 18th century English philosopher to a 21st century Canadian pig. Here's the story. Two guys named Derek and Steve are a married couple in Ontario. For years, they had a few rescued cats and dogs, but they weren't particularly plugged into animal issues. One day, an old friend contacted Steve and asked if he'd be willing to adopt a micro pig, who the friend could no longer take care of properly. Without getting approval from Derek, Steve said yes. And this, by the way, totally sounds like something my wife might do. So in moves this adorable little pink piglet, and they name her Esther. They're smitten, and Esther becomes part of their family. She becomes house-trained. She snuggles with them on the couch, and she romps with their dog, Shelby. But Esther keeps growing and growing. And it turns out Esther was not a micro pig. Fast forward to today, Esther is now 650 pounds. She still lives in the house and plays and cuddles with the guys and their dogs. And her life is documented to her more than 1 million fans worldwide on social media, many of whom have been inspired to stop eating animal products. Theory and statistics have their place, but Esther's story is so valuable because stories of individuals are much more likely to resonate with the human brain. And it's one of the barriers we who work in farm animal protection face. Most people only encounter farm animals when they see part of the animal's dead body wrapped in cellophane in a grocery market aisle. How do we get people to know the individual and help people realize there isn't that big of a difference between their cat and a chicken, their dog and a cow? I don't have a perfect answer to that, but if you need some inspiration and a daily chuckle, I encourage you to follow Esther the Wonder Pig on social media. Fortunately for us, there are many social justice leaders who have made the connection between the exploitation of our species and the exploitation of other sentient species. People like U.S. Senator Cory Booker, Dexter Scott King and Coretta Scott King, Angela Davis, Gandhi, and Dolores Huerta all switched to plant-based diets. The civil rights and labor leader, Cesar Chavez, said, "I became a vegetarian after realizing that animals feel afraid, cold, hungry, and unhappy like we do. I feel very deeply about vegetarianism and the animal kingdom. It was my dog who led me to question the right of humans to eat other sentient beings," unquote. Every UU has many issues she or he is passionate about, and there are only so many hours in a day. Fortunately, you don't have to take your focus away from your other social justice work to make a meaningful difference for animals. The single best thing you can do for animals is simply to choose plant-based meals more often. Next time you're at Chipotle, skip the chicken and try the sofritas, which are made of tofu roasted with peppers and various spices. Grab one of the pamphlets I brought and try one of the recipes for the next Theodore Parker potluck. Just type vegan dishes into Instagram and you'll see the amazing variety of delicious meals that you can make without animal products. And as you likely know, the benefit of reducing your consumption of animal products goes beyond to reducing animal suffering. The world's top scientists have repeatedly determined that raising animals for food is a leading cause of water and air pollution. In fact, the United Nations found that raising animals for food is a larger contributor to climate change than all transportation combined. In addition, the nation's leading association of nutrition professionals found that vegetarian diets result in lower rates of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and obesity. Every one of us agonizes at times over the problems of the world and how we can help. Many issues are so multifaceted and nuanced that we become paralyzed by their complexity. But this issue is something we can each do something about 3 times a day, every time we sit down to eat. That's tremendously empowering. I'd venture to say that most of us in this room have the good fortune to be able to choose what we eat. So why not choose kindness? Thank you for having me here today. Amen.